you.
Here we go. I listened to, all right, I didn't listen, I read your little description in there, which is helpful, but why don't you begin by just telling me about yourself and what you want to talk about?
Okay. So I'm already like neurotically concerned that I'm going to talk too much about myself. So
This is an hour. You can talk the whole time about yourself. That's okay.
okay,
I get
thank you.
there's plenty of PVK on the internet. I don't know that it needs more. So you just talk about yourself.
Thank you. And thank you for, what you do, because I am one of those weirdos that needs to listen to podcasts all the time, and I'd rather listen to you than a lot of other stuff that's out there. So thank you.
Thank you.
So basically, I spent all of yesterday thinking about how to begin the conversation, because I feel like there are so many entry points.
Why don't you start with growing up? That's often a good place to start.
Right. So my whole life is characterized by the dramas that my father facilitated by his very intense alcoholism. And yet, underneath that struggle of his, he was really quite an amazing person. And I always had this difficulty understanding how one person can be two very different things. And so yeah, my life was very turbulent. My parents were separated very early on. I lived with my mother until I was in the early days of second grade, and then an incident happened, and I ended up living with my dad, who I think quickly realized that he was over his head in trying to raise a little girl. I have an older sister, but she's 14 years older than me. And the reason that the gap between us was so big is because my sister was born in Poland during the whole regime, and she had oculoblastoma, which is a tumor behind the eye.
Oh, wow.
And this really affected my parents deeply. She was 2 years old or so, and medical care was not of the highest tier, and there were like gas rations and things, and so like my father was desperately trying to take her to specialists, and my mother had like a breakdown, and so the doctors told them that they shouldn't have another child because it might happen again. Fast forward, they came to America in the 90s. My father came first, and then my mother and my sister. And the doctor said, no, the statistical chances of that happening are so low, you should definitely have another child. So I was born. But then very soon my parents separated because of my father's violent behavior. And so my sister became to me a kind of half mom, and so when my father was raising me, I really didn't see very much of my mom. And then she moved to Poland, and so I really didn't see her very much unless I went to Poland in the summer. And I spent every summer in Poland from the age of six visiting my grandmother. So I was one foot in and one foot out. And so then, even more so, my sister became my mom. And I don't know where I'd be if not for that. But then also, so my dad was over his head. And so he did what he knows to do and found a lady to marry. And she became my stepmom. And she had two adult daughters, and she just didn't really like me very much. And then that went on, and there was a whole drama, and they did not get along well at all either. By the time I was almost 18, she left. She just disappeared. She just like one day was there, the next was gone, and I haven't seen her, heard from her since then, basically. So I was just a walking disaster, you know. It wasn't like I wasn't like the type of I wasn't like going to juvie because I was too like careful, you know. Like I was like straight A student by whatever means necessary, while also being with the wrong people for the wrong reasons, doing the wrong things, and just kind of trying to like not exist in constant pain, but often existing in pain. And then basically, my father's response to his second wife leaving him was to totally collapse, because that's also when the whole housing bubble thing happened. So there's so many intersections of what like really broke him down. And then he just ended up dying suddenly, in the wake of like an he was in a romance that he was maybe going to move to Poland for, and this was all like, but it was kind of starting to fall apart, and then he just died suddenly. And
How
autopsy
old were you
revealed
when he died?
nothing. I think 22.
Okay.
So in a way,
Yeah.
that freed me from something, this grip that he had on my life. But it was an unhinged freedom, you know. It was based in nothing. And so yeah, there was just a lot of like drinking, you know, and whatever. And again, it wasn't like this totally like reckless thing, because somewhere in all of that, there were moments like there I had my grandmother every summer, who was like an actual little saint, you know, like a beautiful person that taught me without words, just taught me by being. And my sister, you know, she has her own issues from the family history, but she created this persona of being very solid, and so she balanced me. And so I had so many right people in the right places that somehow kept me from totally like spinning off. And and so right around before my dad died, I ate psychedelic mushrooms, and it kind of changed everything. In that moment, I was with a bunch of friends, and it was just a very interesting time. But there were like several lessons that were immediately engraved into my mind that I didn't really understand the fullness of until later. But the first thing that struck me was, I actually hate myself. I don't want to live. And I saw that clearly. And I, in this state, asked, well, that's why? That's silly. Like, you're alive, so why should you wish to be dead, you know? And so I was able to reconsider all of these things, and I immediately knew that, okay, so you should probably stop smoking weed all the time, and yeah, stop drinking, and all these things, like, oh, just start here, you know? And but it was also beyond those very practical things. It's like the group was about 10 people, and immediately it split into two between these like hyper-rational materialist types that were arguing for how science is going to prove everything, and science is the only answer, and blah, blah, blah. But then there was this other group of people, of which I felt very much like in tune with, that was saying, the ineffable is the supreme period, and that is the source. And it was so funny to hear them talk about their measuring instruments and their numbers, and we're laughing and laughing. It fills us with such joy because it's silliness, you know? And so that moment kind of ripped up the husk of who I was and allowed some new growth. And it really it started this long process of unraveling and rebuilding. And all the while, I'd always been a kind of an old person in a young body, because I saw old people and some of them looked like they knew what they were doing and others seemed like strange children that were confused and like wearing clothing that doesn't befit an adult, you know? And so I kept noting that the people that I most respect and most want to emulate have a certain way about them, which is to be more forgiving, to be more focused on what is beyond appearances, all these old people things. But then I realized that not all old people are like that. And that's in a sense where I'm at now, because I sometimes can't believe what people are doing, like all this stuff about the like how the line, the hard line on like pedophilia and child porn, like all of this is getting so blurry in our society right now. And I'm really like, these are adults that are letting this happen. Like, we are adults and we are letting this happen. And some people are so like, ooh, that they don't understand what's going on, like what's at stake here. And it's a great time to be alive if you want to fight for something, I guess. But that's kind of the thing. So I've always been more of a lurky watcher than a doer, you know? And, you know, I feel like I'm being pushed into some kind of doing, but this is also where it ties into what I was saying about the question of how to be a feminine woman in this world, because I know that my doing, and I've always been kind of fixated on doing, isn't always the best option. Sometimes you're not doing is the best choice.
Right.
I very much feel that way about women in the public realm. Like, okay, so to fast forward, basically, I ended up becoming Catholic again, despite totally rejecting it. And now, like in my lifetime, and I'm just about to be 30, the church has changed so much that the little Polish Catholic parish that I went to as a kid and didn't really care about is so different from the general church you're going to walk into now. It's just frightening. And I hear these whispers of like female deacons and stuff. And I'm just like, really? Like Catholics? Really? This is what we're doing? And that scares me, because it's like, it sucks to go on this big journey and to end up with the church that like everybody hates and thinks is a bunch of demons and then have to defend something that I don't believe in, which is female leadership in the church, like of that type.
Right.
Again, it's not like I don't think women, like I don't think women should just never open their mouths, but also the way in which you open your mouth and in what setting this all matters, you know? And so I guess like deep in my heart, I know that I don't have anything to prove to anybody, and I don't need to go and do all the things which I once thought I had to do to gain some kind of, you know, position. I don't want position, you know, but it, you suffer for that, you know, you suffer for not being the whatever of the day. And so I recently got married, and I can't believe that happened, because again, for the longest time, I thought, why would anybody do this? You know, it's so ridiculous. And then now when I hear people with the whole marriage crisis, and I listened to that video you did recently, and the comments to that video were so heartbreaking. And, you know, just the whole, like, this anger between the red pill and the men going their own way, and I understand it, I empathize with it, but also like the things that come out of some of their mouths are so hurtful, you know, but also the things that women are doing right now are so disgusting that like, yeah, who would tether themselves to a psycho beast, you know, like who would do that? But okay, so right now I'm like trying to be like a normal person, you know, like I'm trying to lean into just being like, you know, just being a person. And I feel like a big revelation of this this God thing really was that he doesn't want me to be anything like out of the ordinary. He just is asking me to like do the hard work of being normal and plain, you know.
And not just normal, but I mean, especially given your story, you creating a good home is extraordinary for you.
Yes. Yes.
Because you didn't come out of a good one.
Right. Right. And yes. And so, yes, I consider that my primary vocation, not because someone told me that that's my primary vocation, but because I think that that is the most important job, period, and that I am most suited to it, and that I really do have so many skills that allow for a child to thrive, you know.
Yeah,
And so
yeah.
that excites me, but it saddens me that in the eyes of Joe Schmo on the block, I'm like a like lazy lady that doesn't want to go work at the supermarket or whatever.
There's a dirty little secret that I think there are a lot of wives in the workplace that would love nothing better than to be able to stay home, especially when their children are young and small. I hear that all the time, that the pulling apart of people of, you know, okay, so they got maternity leave, 6 months, big deal.
Yeah.
You know, what they really need is more like 18 years.
Yeah.
Or maybe 12, you know, something like that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And then, so yeah, so now it's like the economic situation is difficult for many people right now. And I'm not like, I'm not from money, to say the least, but I also think people have certain expectations of what their life is supposed to look like and feel like. Which, you know, all this talk about sustainability, complete bull, just crap. Like, I feel like the movement in the 70s, you know, like natural, whatever, people were authentically kind of doing that. Whereas now it's like, buy this thing so you appear to be, and, you know, and it's just like this mindless consumption. And I am very much a victim of that. But I just, you know, like, I really think we could get by on a lot less. And if we pooled our resources, like, do we all need to buy the same book? Like, can we read it one at a time and then talk about it or read it together? You know, like, it really doesn't have to be, you know. And do we need to buy the ice cream maker? Can we have one for 10 families, you know? And so, whatever. yeah. But so I may seem like I'm semi, you know, vanilla in many ways now to the average onlooker, at least for the first 5 minutes, but I've always been kind of a fringy, you know, and I enjoyed that position and I took it on as a shield because as a child, again, I noticed that the crazy person, the woo, you know, the person that's dancing in the rain is shielded from so much.
Yeah.
They might be susceptible to certain things, but they are freed from so much harm. Like the, even just like when COVID rolled around, there was never any, like, I had, you know, I was concerned for my health and the health of the people around me for the first like 2 weeks until I realized that this doesn't add up. This is strange, you know. The people die in the hundreds of thousands of addiction every year and we don't care, but now somebody sneezes and it's a big problem and daddy government wants to take care of us. I just, you know, so I'm glad that I lived in that weird fringe, that it gave me these goggles, you know, and it made me, you know, cynical and suspicious, but I'm also integrating that and allowing a little bit of trust to come through when it's appropriate, because really not many trustworthy people roll around, generally speaking, you know. Okay, so, you know, like the question, like, what are we doing here in this internet corner thing, right? I live here because I live in New York, and everybody basically, except for like that weird guy, you know, that you can be like, you know, and he's like, yeah, I know. But everybody else is just like, they're just parroting garbage. And as soon as you have an original expression, it threatens them so much that it's a, you know, it's a big deal and you might lose your job, you know? So it's just like, I need to remember that New York is not the only place in the world. And even though I've been to a bunch of different places, I had like a 2-year vagabond around Europe, and there are so many different places and so many different kinds of people and so many ways to engage life that are much slower and more thoughtful than that in New York. It's like New York thinks it's the only place, and it tells everybody else it's the only place, and so that's how everybody catches the program.
That's good. I grew up just outside of New York, so
yeah, and you're in California, right?
I'm in California now. And right. The other place that is just like New York in that way.
Yeah.
Only we have better weather.
Right. Yeah. And I was thinking about this too, because you're such like a solid, you know, presence, just kind of like Jonathan Peugeot. You know, he's got that, like, he's never done drugs. He's just been slowly unfurling his gifts, and there he goes, you know. And that's a beautiful thing and very necessary for the rest of us who need to kind of get some role modeling on how to just stay with what is, you know. And that's part of kind of what brought me back to Catholicism. It's not just because it is the faith of my father and such, but there's an element of that. It's like I was so defiant and rebellious. It's like this one thing is something I can kind of honor, you know? Yeah. And it's not only that. It's just like I did the full tour through the world of religions. That was my, you know, concern. I wanted to figure it out, and I was a bit of a perennialist, you know, and I think to some degree I remain that way. But yeah, I before I really reverted, I was basically just about ready to be a Hare Krishna type, you know. I was really rolling around those circles for a long time, and before that I'd spent a lot of time with the Zen Buddhists, and I did a lot of that. But I felt like, one, Buddhism was missing God. You know, it just really was. It was like a waiting room to something. And it taught me how to be with myself, how to be in silence, how to be with God. Because in those, you know, full day, 3 day long silent meditations, at some point I'm talking to God, you know. I'm not trying to shut myself up. I'm just talking to God. And then the Krishna, I fell in love with Krishna, as they say, because the whole idea is that Krishna is this charming character who you can fall in love with on any number of levels. You can relate to him as your father, you can relate to him as your lover, you can relate to him as your son or as your friend. He has all these areas that he can fill in for you. And all these descriptions of him and all this ecstatic poetry. I have this book, actually, I wanted to show it to you. It's a wonderful book. It's the Oxford Anthology of Bhakti Literature.
That's an interesting title.
Yeah, it's so the bhakti is like the, you know, devotional. It's like the devotional thing. And so these men were going so crazy in love for Krishna that they would abandon all their responsibilities. Their wives were angry at them because they're not providing, and they're dancing in the street and singing songs to this little blue man that they love, and they didn't care. And they wrote these beautiful words. And so I saw God as my husband, you know, and that allowed me to actually have a relationship with him, because my father, my actual earthly father, had been so all-consuming that I thought that that's what God was. I thought God was the, like, overly controlling, overly involved, fiery type only. And, well, I don't like that, so I guess God's not for me. And then, you know, and then I realized that that's just not what God is. And that was great. But then, like, while I'm loving and appreciating all of this Hinduism stuff, I feel like, okay, but I'm not Indian, you know. I'm not Indian. And although there are plenty of girls like me that go to India, it's not my culture. And even though I feel like this very intuitive connection and understanding of their culture and of a very deep respect for it, it's just not my culture. And I kept noticing these parallels of devotional love for Krishna and Jesus. And I just was seeing, like, so many parallels. I saw differences too. And a lot of those differences are what kept me from committing to the Hare Krishna weirdos, you know. I was like, I don't know about you guys. And so I started to very slowly dip my toe into Jesus in general, just in general. Also, somewhere in there, kind of like, I realized that I was in, like, a weird, esoteric, overly spiritual, ungrounded space, because I was hanging out with, like, too many yoga, weed smoking people. And I went down the path of, like, oh my God, this is all demons and I need to distance myself. So I just started to, like, throw away any images I had of any deities, anything that was, like, new age. I just got rid of it all. And I would sit in relative darkness and pray. And I'd be very careful in my wording. I would be very obsessed with getting it right, that I'm directing my prayer to the one God, the God of all creation. This is who I'm speaking to. This is who I worship. And I spent a lot of time in that space. And it started out fearful because I didn't know what I was, like, doing, and I didn't know who I had offended. And but slowly, somewhere in there, I found that God was there. He was there, and it's impossible to put to words, at least in this context. And then I was like, okay, I love God and I need God and all that, but I don't know about Jesus necessarily. Like, I don't know who Jesus is. And I had my doubts because of, you know, everything that culture tells us about Christians and Christianity. And again, yeah, the hypocrisy, sure. But everybody's a hypocrite, so that's but I had my sister, who, again, God bless her, I told her one day, just randomly, I was like, you know, God is real. And she was like, okay, because she went the way of, like, I'm an atheist, but at the same time, like, every bit of art that she consumed is inspired by people who have the God question and the God love inside of them. And recently I heard you talking to someone, I don't remember who it was, they were talking about Nick Cave.
Yeah,
and how he came around. My sister loves Nick Cave and Leonard Cohen, and, you know, so like, she says she's an atheist, but and anyway, so she heard this in me, and although she didn't understand, she immediately told me about a friend that she had in high school who was also a Polish guy who ended up now, funny enough, is an Anglican priest, but he was not. He was actually in India, like, helping HIV patients and, doing a whole lot of stuff, and then came back to the US and was helping homeless youth and all this stuff. So she put me in contact with him, and I was like, yeah, he's cool. He's got like dreads down to his butt, and he's, you know, he's like a cool guy, but he's not like trying to be cool, but also he likes Jesus. And I'm like, this is interesting. I wonder what this is about. And I ended up kind of going to Anglican church for like a few weeks. And I was like, wait, this is Anglican? Is this not Catholic? I was very confused. I hadn't been to church in so long. And I just was kind of like, wait, why are you saying you're Anglican? And you know, I knew what Anglicans were from history class, but I don't know. I didn't understand what we were doing there. And then when I started to actually, you know, read up on that, I was like, wait, this makes no sense at all. And it just, it, and it soon, as I was, you know, I was grasping for more and more foundation, more and more earth groundedness, and less like we make up the rules as we go along. And I just, that didn't do it for me. So although I still, you know, respect him very much for who he is and what he does, I just didn't, you know, see the point of that. And then simultaneously, by a long, crazy story, I ended up going to a Catholic Benedictine monastery for a year, partly to escape the weirdness of COVID, and partly because it had been a little dream of mine for a few years. And because I had always, in somewhere in the back of my mind, even in like my weird 13-year-old, I'm an atheist phase, thought that I was somehow going to be some kind of monkey hermit type. And so I had to kind of dip my toe in. And then as I was there, I had already, you know, like by this point, Jesus was somebody that I had enormous respect for. Like, I wasn't like ready to say 1000% he's my Lord and Savior, but I really love what you did, you know? And then as I was there, obviously I'm around all these very faithful women. They're all very like powerful women that are doing very intense labor, but also sing Gregorian chant multiple times a day. And, you know, anyway, so nobody, this wasn't like the kind of environment where someone's like actively teaching me about Jesus or talking to me about converting. It was just like I was doing my cow work and sheep work and whatever, and going to mass and not, you know, not really participating, but just more being there. And then just something happened at some point in that year. And I was 1,000, I was 1,001, you know, and it went from being kind of like went from being Jordan Peterson understanding to I don't care what people say about me. This is my Lord, you know, and there was again that humility, that like I'm crazy dancing in the streets vibe that I needed to surrender. I needed to give myself. And I just did. And there was this like trad young priest guy who was visiting, and you know, he's wearing his full regalia. And I tell him, I need to go to confession. And he's like, okay, you know, meet me at this time. And okay. And we're walking around the grounds. And I think he was expecting me to be like, oh, I haven't been to confession in 3 months. And, you know, I said something bad about a girl. In reality, I gave him the confession of a lifetime.
And, he gave the whole load.
Yeah.
You know, there it is.
Yep. I had a piece of paper to make sure I hit all the points. But, you know, it's funny because it only took like one big circle around to get through it all.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, because I wasn't going to like get like knit.
You didn't need the details.
Yeah, we don't need details. I just need to, you know, I need to say what happened, you know, the big points. And I did that. And that was really hard. I put it off for a long time before I finally got the courage to do it. And
Yeah.
then I did it, and I'm like, okay, well, by all measures, I'm ready to receive the Eucharist tomorrow, you know?
Yeah,
And
yeah.
then I did that. And, you know, it's not like, again, like people, it's not always the ecstasy of receiving your Lord, but like sometimes it is. And sometimes you're so disappointed in yourself for not recognizing what's happening, you know, because you're just like, okay, did that. But it's the participation, it's the being with the people and communing, you know. That's what really started to make sense, because I had spent so much of my life on the internet, like being the internet girl in a lot of ways, and asking Google to tell me everything. And so we got married in this church that's a 10-minute walk from here. And
congratulations.
Yeah, and I joined the choir, even though they sing terrible, you know, terrible songs. But I was thinking about this today. It's better to sing a terrible song to God than a catchy song to Satan. And that I felt that way for a long time, you know, like
make
way
a
before all
joyful
this.
noise.
Yeah, and that's again why the Hare Krishnas had my heart, because they were singing with devotion. It doesn't matter if you can sing very well, although it helps if you can. And, you know, everybody's getting into it. And I really love that. But this is, you know, this is what we're doing now. We're doing it the, like, weird Long Island, you know, Catholic way now. Everybody there is really mean to each other. They smack talk. And but they've all known each other for like 30 years, and yep. I know they love each other underneath, but they're just so disrespectful. And I'm learning how to be with this, even though it makes me supremely uncomfortable, even though I've spent all my life avoiding people as much as possible, because I don't want to face their ugliness, I don't want to face my ugliness, I just rather not. I'd rather go on the internet and listen to a podcast. But in the short time, it's been great, and I know it's great to keep going in this direction. And I also started like volunteering with these kids with special needs as like a catechist, and it's hard and it sucks a lot, but you know, if that's good, you know, so because yeah. these are my people here, yeah. And I'm hoping to, you know, that the sacrifice adds up to something,
yeah,
ultimately,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, just yesterday, the kids, you know, were like talking about Advent, and there's a lot of boys in the group, and they're young boys, and they think all of this is cringe and lame, because it is. And you've got like these older ladies, you know, telling them that Jesus loves them. And it's like, oh man, you know, because Jesus does love us, but like, if you're happy and you know it, Jesus loves you, it's not gonna win too many people. So that's kind of a bummer. And recently our choir did like this interfaith prayer service at the local Greek church down the way, and it was so, you know, because you go in there and the incense is blasting and the everything is everything, and then they had this Greek guy who was the cantor, and it was crazy. It kind of sounded like a call to prayer at the mosque, but like more, you know. And it was incredible in a lot of levels. And I've been to an Eastern Catholic Ukrainian church, which really ticked the boxes for me. Like, it had the Slavic vibes, and it had the Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me, a sinner, is the only prayer I'll ever need, you know. And so it was just beautiful, and the sanctuary was just stunning, and the wood and the images, and you know, so it did a lot for me. But again, I'm not Ukrainian, although now that the whole Ukraine Russia thing is happening, my whole life everybody was like, oh, are you Russian? No, I'm Polish. And now that this Ukrainian thing is happening, it's like, oh, are you Ukrainian? No, I'm not Ukrainian, you know?
Although there are a lot of Ukrainians in Poland right now.
yes, and they are our brothers, and I have no, you know, no hate. But you know. So, so there. So, but that's the problem. That's what keeps me with the Catholics, because the whole Orthodox nationalist thing, as much as I like leaning into my nationalism, I don't think it's great for my soul all the time. Although in a certain level it is, it is about engaging like who your brethren are, you know. So it is, it's this tension. But then also I do feel like in the earthly realm we need the captain, we need the commander, we need someone who's steering the ship, or else it's just kind of, you know. So again, that's what, like, the, it's an imperfect church, it's a big bloated bureaucracy, it's on the edge of a lot of things, but it's my home, you know. So it is what it is. And I remember also you were saying in a video a little while back about somebody, I think they were Baptist and they came back around.
That's Sally Joe back in North Dakota with her Baptist people.
Yeah. And it's like, you can't really fault a person. And so this is my frustration with, like, you know, I'm glad that men are the way they are and that they pursue things with extreme determination, you know, that drive. But I, you know, God made women a certain way so that we can, like, rein it in, you know? And it's like, it gets, when things, like, who was it? Peter Kraft, right? He said, when the monster's at your door, you know, fighting brothers reconcile. That's a real paraphrase, but that's what he said. And I just feel like right now, the enemy is not, you know, oh, that one's this denomination, that one's this denomination. It's like you got the Jews, the Muslims, the Christians, and some good wishing agnostics and some atheists who know what evil is and they don't want it, you know. And I feel like that's what we really need to be focused on. But then the interfaith thing is also like, what are we trying to do? You know, well, I think what we're trying to do is establish up and down, right and wrong. That would be great if we could get those 2 points, you know. And so that's it. And that's, you know, that's what gives me faith and hope. One at a time, one friend at a time. We all have similar concerns. And if we just kind of frame it correctly, we realize we can't be fighting each other. The political divide right now is annoying and stupid. It always has been, but it's a particular kind of really stupid, polarized and stupid. And I just don't understand why more people don't realize that neither team is righteous, you know. And I'm not saying, like,
lots of people realize that they're just not on the panels of the warring teams.
That's true.
It's not a lot of fun to be in the stadium when it's like Niners or Raiders. Well, I can go either way. People don't like that.
That's true. Yeah, but okay, so yeah, that's the thing. That world of the this or this, that's like the realm of men, you know? That's, they're going out there and they're going to go fight it out and they got things to settle and that's fine. But then they all have to come home and, you know, everybody's got to eat and take a shower, you know? And we just need to, like, get really, we need people at home to cultivate the home, to be a pleasant place to return to so that people don't bite each other's heads off so much, you know? And so it's the unglamorous job, but it's a job that needs to be done. Can't be outsourced very much. And I don't know, I guess the whole suburban life is a big problem. People don't have any purpose, and the whole, I think it was you. I listened to so many videos that I don't even know who's talking anymore, but the question was about whether, you know, oh, actually it was you talking to Grim Grizz, that first conversation, I think. And the question was about, you know, what are we going to do when the machines take over and there's nothing for us to do anymore? Because nothing, like meaningless labor has no meaning and can't be sustained. And, you know, I just feel like, I'm not saying we can go back to an agrarian society, but we really need to get into the earth. Like, we need to realize that food comes from there and have a hand in doing something with it. And that solves so much because it answers so many problems. Like, if you feel hungry and you feel an existential crisis, both of those things are solved by being involved in the labor of food production, you know, and not everything can or should be done in this massive scale. I don't think that model has much time left. And although some people want us to eat bugs and such as a response to that, we don't have to do that. There are other ways, but that's what you have to do if you want to live in a city and like have Uber Eats or something, you know. It's just yeah, there are so many casualties, unnecessary casualties in this weird war. Yeah, and the attack on the children, you know, the attack on the children in on their very vulnerable sexuality is a serious problem. It just is what it is. And this is actually funny because when I was growing up, my mom would always, she's like one of those people that doesn't know how to communicate unless it's like some kind of expression of anxiety. She's just always like, and she would always say, watch out for the pedophiles. Even when I was like 18. And I would make fun of her constantly.
Sorry, Mike, I can't change the language on that.
I thought, like, what pedophiles is she talking about? What world is she living in? Meanwhile, I've had so many experiences with these freaks out there. They're crazy ass people, and they are in the schools, you know? I can say that, no question. So yeah, like the media right now wants to portray like anybody who says anything about pedophilia as some kind of like and that's what I did to my own mother. I told her she was crazy for seeing pedophiles everywhere, and it's like, okay, but they are everywhere and they do weird stuff to get what they want, you know, and they're very sneaky.
Yeah,
so anyway, pedophiles are real.
Well, you have indeed managed to fulfill your prophecy.
What's that?
You pretty much talked the whole time.
Yeah.
And it was delightful. It was delightful. But I don't, you know, I know getting rando slots are hard, and you're the lucky winner from this week, or yeah, one of the two lucky winners. So anything you want to ask me before we're completely out of time?
Yeah, I mean,
You don't have to have anything. I mean,
no,
like,
I do, because you do have the presence of a father. You have the, you know, the dad like vibes, you know, as they say, in the best kind of way.
Well,
and
you.
You know, like, what's your fatherly advice for the children? What are we to do to make it out here?
Well, it sounds like you've gained a lot of wisdom in your life so far, and that's a good start. You know, you had to survive a lot. You've paid attention. You haven't been too dismissive. And it sounds like you've made some good choices. And you haven't, I mean, the fact that you can hang in there in this church while seeing all of its weirdness and deficiencies says a lot about you, because a lot of life is doing that. Because you'll, you know, not say anything against your husband, but you'll have to deal with his weirdnesses.
Yep.
And then if you have children, you'll have to deal with those. And the schools will have weirdnesses. And your neighbors will, and so part of, so I was listening to a group of randos. They were doing the just talking thing on Grail Country, and it was a wonderful conversation. But, you know, a lot of the problem that we have these days is that Peterson does have it right in that you can't really make a safe world.
Mm-hmm.
Evil is too pervasive and too sneaky and too deep within all of us. So you can't really make a safe world. So you really do have to help people get stronger. And part of them getting stronger is surviving evil.
Mm-hmm.
And now you didn't have that option of a safe world by growing up with whom you did and how you did. But, you know, the old saying, you know, the same sun that softens wax hardens clay. And you didn't get hard. You stayed in the game. You didn't take a quick bitter out. One of the real key things that came out of Peterson's mouth when he emerged from his time between wave one and wave two was that in the midst of all of the suffering he was doing, what's the name of that, akathisia or something? I mean, sounded absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
Was he had to work really hard on not getting bitter. And that was exactly right. And you can see the insanity of so many things, the ironies, the hypocrisies, all of the craziness, but you don't run away. You're not overly triggered. You can keep a hold of yourself, and while others are doing their silly little games, and that's a huge part of life. I always tell people that insanity. I mean, insanity isn't like COVID. I mean, you can pick up COVID just by breathing. To one degree or another, you have to go along with insanity to really catch it. And yeah, you're better off not to. And it sounds like through this process of a really interesting story, well told. I loved listening to your story. Through this story, you have gained wisdom. You have a sense of self. You understand that you need a community, no matter how imperfect, to stay sane. And it sounds like you're doing it. So good for you. Good for you.
Thanks.
I hope you let me share your story. Now, it's okay to say no. And maybe you want to review it, that's fine, but I listen to a lot of stories. Like I say, only about probably half or two thirds are shared. Many of them are not shared because, you know, in this case, your father's no longer with us. And so it's a little easier to have some honesty about him. And for many people, that's not the case. And so they can't share their story without in some ways confessing the sins of their fathers and mothers. And that's not necessarily appropriate for an open YouTube channel.
Right.
Which is totally, which is absolutely right. But so many people, you know, between 7 and 10% of people are alcoholics. That's a huge number.
Yeah.
And many people have grown up in homes with alcoholics of one level or stripe or another.
Yeah.
And sometimes it meant that mom was just inattentive and negligent and passed out a lot. And sometimes it meant that dad was an angry tornado that everyone had to really steer clear of.
Yeah.
But I mean, part of your story is that, you've survived, you've done well, and you've taken a difficult hand that you were dealt and done some pretty cool things with it. And that And again, you know, part of why I do these videos is you're a rando. You're not, you know, you don't have a million followers on Instagram. You don't have a big Instagram. You don't have a big record label. You're a real person who has triumphed and overcome so far what you've been faced with. And you'll be faced with more. I mean, to have children in this world, I understand why young people say, I don't want to bring any children into this world. I understand it's an act of faith, and it's an act of great faith in some ways, but it always is that. You know, mm-hmm. I was born into the depths of the Cold War, you know, not mm-hmm. too far from the Cuban Missile Crisis. We have to keep going into the future. And so I loved your story, and you told it really well, and I was certainly blessed by it. So
thank you.
I really appreciate you giving me an hour and sharing yourself in this way.
I have to say, it's very hard. It's very hard to, but it's also hard not to give yourself. So thank you for the opportunity.
Well, I will send you this video and you can review it and decide for yourself. Okay. And then if you decide to share it, I'd be happy to share it. And if, you know, it also happens that sometimes a year or two after something happens and you're like, can you take my story down? Sure, I'll be happy to take your story down. Okay. But just provide the link when you send me that email so it's easy for me to find. But what a pleasure getting to know you. And I pray that God continues to bless you, because he's clearly with you. And I believe he won't leave you or forsake you. So.
Amen.
Amen. Take care. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye-bye.